I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. In my office here at home down the hall that leads to my library hangs some lyrics by Edward Kleban, his song Self-Portrait. It's not a well-known lyric by the man who wrote the lyrics to the music of Marvin Hamlisch for A Chorus Line, for which they won the Tony Award and the Pulitzer Prize. Kleban died in 1987, and in his will was the provision that an annual prize be awarded to the most promising lyricist and librettist in the American musical theater. It was recently announced that $100,000 each would go to Daniel Matte as the most promising musical theater lyricist and Alan Gordon as the most promising musical theater librettist. Previous recipients of the Kleban Prize include some noted individuals who are responsible for such works as Shrek the Musical, Parade, Pacific Overtures, Assassins, Grey Gardens, and Avenue Q, among many others. Daniel Matte joins me now. He's also received the Jonathan Larson Grant and ASCAP's Cole Porter Award. He's written the lyrics for the Will Aronson composed The Trouble with Doug, a comedic musical inspired by Kafka's The Metamorphosis. He's also written the book, music, and lyrics for the story of Jobeth, the modern-day American retelling of the Book of Job. Mr. Matte is also a teaching artist who's got degrees from McGill and NYU. He was born and raised in Vancouver, where he founded the In the House Festival, which celebrates its 10th anniversary this month. We'll talk about this remarkable prize, his work as a lyricist, composer, musician, and more. I can't get enough of his song, February's Coming. Man, it's just a great song about dealing with a broken heart. The lyrics are so sharp, they're funny, they capture the zeitgeist. Do yourself a favor and listen to it. It's a fine song. You can hear some of his music on his website, danielmatte.com, which showcases just what a prodigious talent he is with words and music already. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Daniel Matte. Mr. Matte, good morning.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So congratulations on this extraordinary prize. When you look at who it's named for, who's judged it, who's received it, it's quite remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing. I mean, the judges are all really accomplished people in the field, and it's a nice array of different specialties represented on the judges panel this year. So you had Henry Krieger, who's the composer of Dreamgirls and Sideshow, and Michelle Pach, who's a Tony-winning and very accomplished actress, singer, whom I recently saw in a wonderful production of the Michael John Lacusa musical Giant at the Public Theater here in New York. And so I was just very honored that as a performer, she would, you know, I try to write stuff for performers to sing. So it's nice to have a performer appreciate the craft. And then Sean Hartley, who is in the music publishing and licensing world here in New York. So yeah, I mean, great judges, and the list of previous winners is staggering. Mm-hmm. A number of people I consider peers in recent years, you know, people like Adam Guan and Joe Iconis and Marcy Heisler, these are people I've looked up to in terms of people who've really made a go of it, and people who have, you know, they're putting their stamp on this traditional musical theater form and taking it in new directions, and exciting and humbling and honoring to be named among them. And then further, if you look further back, there's people who've had enormous success since the award. Yeah. People like Michael John Lacusa, people like Jeff Marks and Bobby Lopez, the writers of Avenue Q. I mean, on and on. So it's stunningly prestigious.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been it's a bit of a challenge to get my head around, but it's a very exciting challenge.
Now, how does it work? Do you have to submit your work this far, and then they judge you on its merit, or do you just submit your name, or how does?
Yes. So, well, actually, the submissions are judged blind, so you're not allowed to put your name on anything except for sort of a cover form. But I've submitted several times in the past. The deadline every year is in mid-September. And as a lyricist, I'm not sure what the criteria is for the librettist category. I think as a librettist, you submit like an act, you know, either act one or act two or act three, I guess, of a book musical. In my case, as a lyricist, you submit up to eight type each from my other three shows. So it gave me a chance to sort of display the variety of styles and storytelling contexts that I've written for.
Well, let's
and then, they're judges. You're judged based on those lyrics, and you're allowed to provide, a certain amount of dramatic context for each lyric, so that people know, you know, where it slots into the particular story.
Well, let's talk about style. We're on, I guess, the radio, if you will. If we had to describe what your lyrics, what your music sounds like, is there an easy way other than just simply listening to it to describe it?
If there is, I wouldn't know what that capsule description would be.
It
might be in my interest to figure one out as my career moves forward, but I haven't found one. I mean, I can tell you what excites me, and I can tell you what my influences are as far as I understand them. And it might be, I mean, musically, I'm all over the map. I mean, I guess we could start by talking about lyrics, since that's what the focus of this award is for. I come at musical theater writing, I'm sort of late to the game of musical theater writing in that I was a singer-songwriter before I was a composer-lyricist. So I definitely think of, when I come at a song, my main frame of reference is pop songs and singer-songwriter songs and songs in various popular genres. Now, there's always been an overlap and a feedback loop between musical theater songwriting and pop songwriting, and then depending on which writer or writing team you're looking at, they diverge from that more or to a greater or lesser extent. I'd say that my stuff mainly, and again, it depends on context, but in the main, my musical theater songs are structured, many of them like songs that you might hear on the radio in a different genre. Now, as far as what genre, I write in every genre that I love, and that's a lot. That's a lot. So, this song you mentioned, and thank you for your kind words about it. February is coming. That's a song that I wrote on guitar, and I write songs on both piano and guitar. But that's a song where it's written in a folk acoustic sort of singer-songwritery idiom with a splash of jazz tonality and harmony. And I wrote it in open tuning on the guitar, so it has a kind of imprint of, like 70s solo Paul Simon stuff, when he was sort of exploring those flavors, and Joni Mitchell, certainly. Ani DeFranco was a big influence on me in the 90s. She used a lot of those open tunings, and the tone of the lyrics is a wry sense of humor to it that's mixed in with, I guess, the heartache that you described. My lyrics tend to be pretty self-aware in terms of characters trying to figure out how they're feeling. And they're able to express that search for meaning and search for the perfect way of putting it in fairly sophisticated ways. So they tend to, and I'm a big lover of rhyme. I mean, hip hop is a huge influence on me, and Bob Dylan, and down the line, Donald Fagen from Steely Dan is maybe my favorite songwriter at the moment. So. And then, of course, all the great musical theater wordsmiths, Sheldon Harnick, Yip Harburg, Stephen Sondheim. So my stuff tends to be pretty laced with rhymes, and then a lot of sort of internal rhymes and hidden rhymes and little subtle, rhyme can be used in kind of glaring ways or in subtle ways, and I do a bit of both.
And where does that come from? I mean, the search that you're the singer or the interpreter of the lyric is looking for. What are they looking for? Does that come from, say, your own introspection, your own thinking about life or meaning?
I think it has to. I mean, I don't have any other explanation for it. It's certainly a fundamental part of my personality structure that I've always been questioning my own experience as a person. That's just something that I, even as a kid, you know, I'm feeling this way. What am I feeling? How does it feel exactly? You know, if the feeling had a shape, what would that shape be? If it could hold water, how much would it hold? Would it hold a teaspoon or would it hold a gallon? You know, listen to me using American measuring systems. I've been living in the States too long. a sort of inquisitive, because I guess the hope is that if I can express it, if I can give voice to it, if I can be specific about this feeling, especially uncomfortable feelings like longing and loneliness and jealousy and bitterness and resentment and fear and anxiety, maybe if I can get a handle on what it is exactly, maybe I can do something with it, or maybe it'll lessen its grip on me.
And do you think it has?
What's that?
Do you think it has in your life?
That's a great question. It's funny, you know, when I was a singer-songwriter, this is back when I was living in Vancouver, and I recorded an album, my stuff. The songs I would write were very directly about me. And like I said, you know, someone like Ani DiFranco was my idol, and she was able to put her autobiographical reflections into songs in very direct, yet very clever and cutting ways. Now, doing that never lessens my burden for me. You know, I could do it, but somehow there was no release. When I found musical theater writing and moved to New York to study it, what I've actually found is that as I am able to put these reflections in the voices of other characters, that has, to a certain extent, freed me up and given me some perspective around it. So a song like February's Coming was definitely written as myself, but it was also written so that anyone else could sing it. And it doesn't have to do necessarily with the exact, you know, breakup situation I was writing about. It's exportable, and there's something more universal about it than anything I would have written previously. And that the more I can do that, the more I can stay very true to my own experience, but depersonalize it, and not make it so specifically about, you know, this particular human called Daniel, with these particular characteristics. The more I can find what other people have in common with me, the more freed up I am around the difficult, challenging aspects of the human experience. And I think that is parallel to everyone's artistic journey, where you find that the more you can express yourself in a way that's both specific and yet kind of expansive and embracing of our commonalities. And even if I'm writing a song about how different I feel, I found that if I do it right, and if I put it in the voice of a likable character, there's going to be a lot of people who feel like they're different, and like they're the weirdo, they're the strange one. And so that, I think the more I can reach out and have my work speak to not only my own experience, but to others' experience as well, the more space and freedom I have around my own, the things I'm writing about. And yet, I can't set out to write something that's going to touch everybody. I really have to start from my own experience. And that goes for no matter what character I'm writing for, whether or not they're superficially like me or not.
There's a couple of songs, and I made notes on them. For example, like Starting Shit With You, I think is a very clever song. I mean, I heard a bit of Cole Porter in that.
For sure, it was definitely an homage to Cole Porter.
Yeah, and then the other song that you sing, that people could look at online is All I Want, and there's a video of you singing it, and you describe it to having a James Taylor and R. Kelly sort of vibe. The one song that I also liked was All About You, and what's the context of that? That's from this musical in the Book of Job, right?
Yeah, that one is from the story of Jobeth, and or at least that's where it originated. It's a song that has been performed out of context, and it seems to work well out of context, just with a few slight lyric changes to take away some of the naming of the other characters. But All About You, it originally comes from the story of Jobeth, and the story of Jobeth is a modern day retelling of the Job story. So in Jobeth, instead of a middle aged man, successful, righteous, upstanding citizen who all of a sudden starts suffering unimaginable loss at the hands of God, who's basically testing his faith, Jobeth is about Jobeth, who's a 17-year-old Kansas girl, the sort of shining light of, you know, the darling daughter of her small town, which is a very plucky place, and she starts losing everything, her parents, her home, her health, and she ends up cast out into the wilderness, camping out at a state park outside of town. And a number of people come with the best of intentions, like in the Job story, to try and counsel her in her distress. But she turns them all away, and she sees through them to their ulterior motives and their own, lack of insight and wisdom. Even though each of them has maybe some valid points to make, she rightly suspects that they don't really get the enormity of what she's going through. And then, towards the end of the show, after she's cursed everybody and everything, and basically set a plague of terrible depression loose upon her town, and everyone is suffering terribly now, her cousin, Billy, comes and visits her, and Billy is, he's her older cousin, but he's never been able to match her in terms of her high achievements. You know, she's going to Harvard on a full scholarship, first in the town to do so. He's never left town, and he works at the local bar, and he's just a local guy, and he's never thought of himself as having much potential beyond that. And he's also never had much of a relationship with his cousin, Jobeth, other than kind of congratulating her and being there for her. Mm-hmm. And then he comes and he sings this song to her when she's at her lowest point, and he doesn't quite know what he wants to say to her, because he's never known what to say to her, and he just kind of opens his mouth, and this cry from the heart comes pouring out to his own surprise, and it starts with the lyric, growing up with you as a cousin, I knew my place. I knew the very best I could do was finish second in any sort of race. Because you got the drive, and you got the smarts, and the gifts that kept on giving. And everybody knew you'd have this awesome life, while me, I'd make a living. And when anyone would ask about the family, like, hey, what's new? It was all about you. And the song continues, and he talks about how he watched her excel at everything, and how everyone was congratulating her, but secretly he wondered, you know, I wonder if she'd had less handed to her, if she'd had, you know, fewer God-given talents, what her life would have been like, you know. And he also confesses that he saw her getting cocky and arrogant and thinking everything is all about her. And he goes on and talks about his jealousy, and he reflects. Again, he turns it inward on himself, and he says, well, okay, and was I bitter? Yeah, a little bitter, but I said, hey, better her than me. All that pressure, so much pressure, who needs it? I'd rather be free. But still, I knew you were holier, so I felt lowlier than thou. I guess I pitied myself all my life. Yeah, I did. Not now. And all of these realizations are happening in the moment, mm-hmm. you know, which as a musical theater writer, you try to put, you know, if the character already knows what they're going to say when they start, or they already know how they're going to say it, it's not as exciting in some ways as a character figuring out what to say because the stakes are so high. Because if they could have said it before, they would have, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't need to sing. thing in musical theater that I always struggle with is, why is this person singing at me right now? Why am I listening to a person singing? I don't accept just on face value that I should sit down in a seat in a theater and people are going to sing at me. I want to feel like it's emotionally borne out by the situation. That's a tangent. But in any case, the song ends up where he basically pleads with her, implores her to return to your life and face your new life with everything you lost, and to realize that we all suffer. The lyric is, who can say they've had it tougher? Because Beth, we all suffer, and we all need to make it through. I'm not pointing the finger. Beth, you are not the point here. That's only your point of view, and this is not about you. This is not about you. And even if it is, it's not all about you. And that's how it ends. So by the end, he's taken the title, the hook, if you will, All About You, and kind of flipped it and saying, look, this, of course it's about you, but it's not all about you, and it's not always all about you. And he's basically, he's inviting her to have a less narcissistic existence. And just to be clear, I'm not, as the writer, I'm not saying he's right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to say he's right. I mean, that song usually gets huge applause, mainly because he makes a very compelling case, and it gives the actor performing it a real opportunity to sing from the heart and to be self-revealing and vulnerable and courageous. Now, he may not. That doesn't mean the character is God. He doesn't see everything, and he may be blind in his own way, but nonetheless, he makes a compelling and relatable and authentic plea to another human being, and that is very that's what's compelling on a stage.
You've made me want to go back and listen to it, and I'm sure people listening to us, listen to you explain it, may want to, I think it'll inspire people to look at it on YouTube. This work that you do is a...
I'm actually not sure that it's on YouTube yet, but it certainly is.
That's where I saw it.
Yeah, there is. No, you're right. Although I would say that those performances on YouTube, the one on YouTube is of me doing it at the piano, and I flub it in a few places. If you really want to hear the song performed to the hilt, I'd recommend going to my website, danielmatte.com, and my last name is spelled M-A-T-E, so that's D-A-N-I-E-L-M-A-T-E.com, and go to the footage section and the listen page, which is basically the audio page, and look for the SoundCloud link of Jason Tam singing it.
Mm.
Jason Tam was one of the stars of the recent Broadway revival of A Chorus Line, mm-hmm. speaking of Cleban. And he's just he used to be on a popular soap opera. I think it was One Life to Live, so he's got a huge following that way. And he does also, just a masterful job of interpreting that song. And also he has a higher singing range than I do, so he can hit the high notes that I wrote, but I can't quite sing.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the future of the musical theater, I mean, there are certain trends that we see. We see a lot of British imports on Broadway now. Then you have sort of the jukebox musicals from the popular music from the past tied together for some sort of story. Do you think the great American musical theater, do you think that's still relevant today and that it'll still have a place in the future?
Yes, I do. I can't comment on where it's currently at necessarily, but I know that there's enough of us who are practicing it and who in various ways care about it and think it has potential, that I think if enough people think something has potential, then it has a pretty good future. I'm part of, I guess you could say, a generation of new writers who I look around me and I see people doing really exciting, new, exciting, I just said exciting twice in the same sentence, but that's because it's exciting.
It is.
things with it and taking it in new directions. A couple of colleagues of mine, and I consider them friends as show about Alzheimer's. That wouldn't have been on Broadway, you know, X number of years ago. It's not on Broadway yet, but it wouldn't have, you know what I'm saying? People are writing things about all kinds of topics and in all kinds of ways with a respect for the past and a respect for the best of musical theater's traditions, but without an undue reverence for the formulas that characterize those past highlights. So, you know, I think anytime musical theater becomes a genre of music, for instance, or like a set of tropes, that's when it starts becoming in danger of fossilizing, because then you're just being nostalgic, or you're just trotting out old things. And it's really the same thing with any art form. You know, people who are in the hip hop community are always wringing their hands and saying, "Is hip hop dead?" Well, 5 years ago, one of the greatest rappers of all time put out an album called Hip Hop is Dead, Nas, you know. But in the past couple of years, there's been a resurgence of really exciting, kind of groundbreaking, creative, ballsy rappers who seem really genuinely excited to be pushing the form forward. And I think that sort of surge of creativity is all musical theater needs, really, to be seen again as a vital and powerful force, and there's always exciting developments going on. You know, in the Heights a couple of years ago, you know, winning all kinds of Tonys, mm-hmm. with a hip hop and salsa inflected score.
Next to Normal,
you know, which tackled some pretty heavy issues of mental health and family dynamics, and won a Pulitzer, and had a whole lot of popular success. There's always going to be Broadway musicals and American, and Broadway's not all there is to the American musical theater, that's important to note. But American musical theater, and I would hope Canadian musical theater as well, there's always going to be a mixture of looking to the past and looking to the future. And I think as long as that willingness to push it forward and to tell new stories and to incorporate new styles of music and new forms of lyric storytelling and all that, as long as that hunger is there for new forms of expression, then I don't see how any art form can become irrelevant.
Danielle, this has been fascinating looking at your work, and congratulations on this prize and continued best wishes for everything.
Joe, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
DanielMatte.com is the website for more. Daniel Matte is the recipient of the 2013 Kleban Prize for Most Promising Musical Theater Lyricist, and he joined me on the line from New York City in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta. Daniel, are you still there?